Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilek, and Sujit Mallow, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 84, being recorded on the 8th of July, 2015. I'm Sujit DeMello, and on Skype with me, I have my two esteemed co-hosts, Kale Teeter and Evan Basilek. Evan, it's good to be back. Good to have you back on the show.
I think we just got a promotion, Kale.
Esteemed.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad to be back. And, we went from colleagues to co-hosts. We double our salary too, right?
You guys are my colleagues.
It's still nothing, Evan. So yeah, it's double zero.
Listen.
No, I'm thrilled to be back. I'd much rather be on this than some nasty, ugly secret. So
yeah. So. A couple of weeks you seemed to be bogged down with these crit sets. Is there any theme to them?
The reality is that I'm in support, and when stuff breaks, that's why I'm supposed to be around. It's not for me to be kind of stuck on something that I haven't solved by the time I'm getting to the end of the day. It's just kind of a bad run from there. I mean, heck, if stuff doesn't break, I have nothing to do. I mean, it really.
So you're happy that the dev guys put a couple bugs in there?
Oh, absolutely. They keep me employed, right? I mean, you know. Well, so I take it back, because if they don't put bugs in, you guys that are you consultants guys will screw something up. So, you know, I mean, I'll still have work.
Nice.
Now, we thought we'd talk about Azure AD today as the main topic, but before we get there, I got an email, I'm sure most of our listeners did as well, and most people who have Azure subscriptions got an email this week talking about some new changes to Azure support. And Evan, I know you're probably closest to this. Is there anything you can share on that?
Yeah, so it is definitely still a work in progress, right? We kind of made the decision that we're gonna kind of flip over to the new portal just like everybody else, right? At some point we have to kind of change our focus to that. But what we're kind of, if you look at the new portal, right, a lot of it is about kind of getting status and kind of more details on your, kind of more granular stuff, right, about your resources. And the support interaction is no different. When somebody creates a case through the old portal, right, the what we used to call the AUX portal internally, I'm not kidding you guys, all I get is, on a good day, is I get a customer subscription number or subscription ID and whatever description they put in. On the new portal, we have a lot more information that comes in. Today, it's not a ton, but we get some additional information that comes in. And what we have plans for that we couldn't do in the old portal, what we're going to be able to do in the new portal, is to be able to potentially to tie the support case that a customer is opening up to the resource that they're having trouble with, right? So if because if all you give me is the subscription ID, you might have 1,000 VMs in there. How do I know which one you're having trouble with? But if with the new portal, we're going to have the ability eventually to be able to say, I'm having trouble with this, not just SQL database, but this SQL database or this specific VM, or this specific instance, right? So it allows us to get a lot closer before we even contact the customer.
Or the customer can put in more information when they open the ticket. Is that where they would go to open a ticket?
Yeah, they'll open it and manage. Like in the old portal, you could open a new ticket or you could see your existing ones and see some status. Mm-hmm. All that stuff is there in the new portal now. It's kind of a more modern, more advanced support experience as well, right? Just like all the other reasons for going to the portal with the other components.
Okay. All right, good. Glad that's. I think that's. I think I may have opened up a ticket at one time, and it was a little complicated. So if they're making things a little easier and better to find, that's all good, I think. Well, I don't know. I'm sure you guys caught some of the headlines today. I think most people know about this now. Kind of a black day for
for computer systems. We had an outage on the NYSE stock exchange, and we United Airlines took an outage as well.
And the New York Times went down as well, right?
And the New York Times. Was it a Washington Post? I forget which one of the newspapers.
Yeah,
they went down too, which is it's kind of bizarre that all these three things would happen in one day. I don't know what's special about today, but it just makes, you know, and there was an article that I was reading about how we're so reliant on computer technology now, and little glitches like this cause so much disruption in our day-to-day lives. I mean, and Kale, I'm happy you weren't flying, you know, today on United. That might have been a bad experience. Which airline did you come? I know you said you were flying.
I'm almost always Delta.
So you're good. But I can imagine all those United passengers being stranded for hours on end. Does that make you think that, you know, when we build applications that sit in the cloud, I mean, I feel like we need to take more care to make sure that these kind of things don't happen. I mean, I guess I don't quite understand, but when we find out what the root cause was, I don't know if we'll ever get to the bottom of it or they'll ever reveal it, but what can we do as cloud developers or, you know, cloud people to build apps that where such things don't happen? Like in the cloud, this is not supposed to happen, right? We're not supposed to take this big outage like this where everything's down for hours. And I mean, it's like it was hours that they were down, not just a few minutes. So this is something very serious. I can't imagine what could take so long for them to fix something, you know, to get it back up and running.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? I mean, until maybe some details are revealed. But, I mean, one of the things we've been talking about, because we've been building some internal training stuff, and some of the stuff we've been talking about from the app side, mostly app dev side, is just the basic concepts about the app, right? How important they are when you go to the cloud, like making sure that your layers are decoupled, pulling your service layers away from, you know, your UI and these kind of things. I mean, it's just kind of common sense things. But you need to make sure that if we're migrating a 10-year-old application, that we kind of take care to do that, because if we put something up there that's fragile, it's still going to be fragile, you know, in the cloud. We need to make sure that we, you know, pay attention to the architecture and put all the right pieces together, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Kale's kind of hit it, you know, right on the head, which is, I mean, you get away from some of the, hardware and infrastructure failures that we see, right, in the on-premise world, although we've had problems in Azure as well, right? But you can't, you know, your infrastructure as a service, even PaaS, doesn't solve, you know, an application design that's brittle, right? So you can take advantage of all these new capabilities to make it less brittle, but if you don't, you're still stuck with the same brittleness.
Right. So, and it's, I guess, you know, your there's always one weak link, right, in your applications, and you got to find out what that weak link is ahead of time. I think a lot of people will enhance applications or maybe move it to another platform by migrating a lot of code without reviewing all the weak links in their applications, and then one day you find out, you know, there's just one piece of functionality which was still in there, which was not redundant or didn't have a proper failover or monitoring built in, and that's what gets you finally. So I think as part of migrating applications to the cloud, I think you guys are right. Starting, taking a fresh look at it and looking at every piece of all the pieces, making sure you use the right things like PaaS, I suppose, right, would be a right thing to use because that's always got the multiple copies and the fault domains and whatnot. It is possible, right, to build an app that just does not fail. Is that, or is that some kind of nirvana that we're looking
yeah.
at? Right now? I mean, I'm just trying to
the perfect
understand.
App. Yeah.
You mean the one that's just vaporware? I mean, yeah.
The one that we never start up. You know,
that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that raises an interesting question for you, Kale, right? Because you're more on the, you know, Sajid, you're kind of more focused on I'm not sure if it's one or just a couple of customers, but right, you're kind of targeted individuals. Kale, you're seeing a lot of different people in your current role. Are you starting to see when you go out and engage with these customers that they're not just talking about, hey, I want to move to the cloud, but they're also saying, and I want to take advantage of the capabilities of the cloud to make my app more redundant? Or is that kind of the next phase that people aren't quite there yet?
Yeah, no, I think the common theme is You know, they want to see if it'll actually work. So they'll say, okay, here's my app. Let's see if this actually works. And tell me what the weak points are going to be, and then start to recommend what's bad about my app. So they want help on, you know, take a look at it and tell me that, you know, I got a tight coupling between in my data layer here that's going to cause a problem if I migrate to Azure SQL database. Or, you know, how stateless my machine is or how stateless my application is. So I think it's a mix, but usually, you know, a lot of people want to do IaaS right away because it's easy, right? So they say they think it's easy, and they say, I know how to do VMs, right? So why don't we just move this over to VMs? And then, again, I don't think it's everything has to be in PaaS. I think that there's places for everything. And so it's like, that's a great first step, you know, but let's take a look at what we could do better. Like, if we did put it in PaaS, what would you benefit from, you know? And so talking through that, that's usually how then people start to realize, like, what are the features? Because a lot of times they don't even know. I mean, this stuff changes so fast, you know, that they don't know, you know. So they're asking about what features are available that make sense for my app.
Yeah, because if they don't go that route, I mean, they're just not getting the benefit, right? They're just they save on hardware, but they don't get all the really cool benefits.
And I know it was just a few years ago when Steve Marks was in Azure in the Azure team. There used to be the Chaos Monkey, right, for Azure.
Yeah.
I think they've been there's some plans to re-release that software.
Dude, I did work on that a long time ago.
Oh, you did? Look at that.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah, didn't you get some presentations at Tech Ready or something?
Yeah, I had the product group with me on this.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that's supposed to, I suppose, try to break the application in some way, right? Isn't that the goal of Chaos Monkey?
Yeah, it's supposed to cause chaos inside your data center. So cause blue screens, slow down database connections. A lot of them don't do destructive type things. They just do things that would cause environment issues. Like they don't delete data from databases, obviously, because the goal is to run that in production.
Right.
To have that Chaos Monkey running live in your production system, which is something not an Azure-specific thing, but Netflix actually does that.
Okay. Yeah, so I mean, just thought like that. I guess that's a tool that developers can use to ensure their apps are more failure-proof before they go out in production.
The funny thing is, Chaos Monkey was the thing that Netflix had created a long time ago to do this, and now they have the Simian Army.
Whoa, what's that?
Which is awesome. I'm not making it up. You can look it up. It's like an army of Chaos Monkeys that go into a data center to cause havoc and stuff. But
I got to say that's the one part that I, you know, so I've not been a big open source guy historically. I mean, I'll use some open source stuff, but I just never really like running my business on open source. I still struggle a little bit with, but man, I got to give the open source community credit. They not only do they have interesting names, but sometimes they just have some that absolutely give you this unbelievably descriptive image of what the code's going to do to you.
Yeah.
Right. You know, to go from Chaos Monkey to Simian Army, just really, it paints that picture. That's like, oh, I get it. I know exactly what this is going to do.
Yep.
Excellent. Okay, so let's talk. We'll just have a quick chat about Azure AD. We haven't spoken about that in a very long time, and I'm sure there's been quite a few updates, and I'm sure our listeners would just like to get a quick refresher on this topic. I think, obviously, one of the most important services that Azure has to offer. Evan, now, look, I know this is one of your favorite areas. What are some of the core capabilities of Azure AD that our listeners should know about or should care about?
Yeah, so it really comes down to identity is the first point, is the first thing you need for any application, right? Even if you just choose to use anonymous, right? The identity, without identity, you can't really go anywhere. Azure Active Directory is all about giving you the ability to have a cloud identity. And then either having this isolated cloud identity, right, kind of like a Microsoft account, right? My Microsoft account really doesn't know anything about my @Microsoft.com identity. Or you can have the hybrid identity, which is where you're syncing your identity to the cloud. And then I can have this either single sign-on if I'm federated, where I, you know, come back to an on-premises ADFS server, or same sign-on where I kind of copy my credentials both in the cloud and on-premises and keep those in sync, or completely independent, you know, scenario. But I'm able to kind of extend my identity to my cloud scenarios, leveraging what I have on-premises, right? You know, and that, I mean, that's huge, because how many passwords do you guys have?
Too many.
Yeah, I mean, I have a password for my password manager because I have so many passwords. Leveraging the ability to, in my corporate life, to have the same identity through all these resources is incredibly important, and not to mention the control it gives the company, right? I mean, you guys have been doing Azure for a while. I mean, remember back in the day, we all did corporate stuff in Azure with our Microsoft accounts, not our @Microsoft.com accounts, but our, you know, @Hotmail or @Live or whatever. So when you left the company, there's no, like, you're still potentially have access to those resources because that's your own personal identity. Now, when it's a Microsoft.com one and it's tied to the corporate Active Directory and there's that integration, if they disable me in the corporate directory, don't get any ideas, then I would have access, I lose access to those resources tied in the cloud, right? So it's really important for enabling those kind of scenarios.
Yeah, I think the one thing that I keep hearing, it seems to be the common theme with big enterprises that want to use Azure Active Directory and some of these synchronization tools, are the first thing that they say is, I don't want some password synced up there. Like, they have a policy, they have security. I've seen this many times. This isn't just one customer. I've seen this with many, because they have a security policy that says, I don't want my Active Directory passwords to end up in Azure. Yeah, exactly. So they say, well, what's this sync tool? What is it actually? Is it syncing? And so going through kind of how that thing actually works under the covers and saying it's not actually doing that if you don't have that feature turned on. We still need to have some sort of identifier up there, right, to tie to, so that we can essentially, when it says, when we have an application pointing in there and it says, okay, it's going to use this Azure Active Directory, and we could talk about this in a little bit with the ADL stuff, but we basically define our application there and say, like, what directory it's pointing to or which tenant it's going to use up there. So when a user comes in and the app says, hey, he's not authorized, it pops up this screen, which probably a lot of people have seen with O365 and those kind of things, where as soon as you put in your org ID, and when I say org ID, like your custom domain name of whatever your company is, and when you try to tab down the password or whatever, then you see this, you know, the dots come up and it actually redirects over to your IDP. To do your federation. So, and, you know, when you show that to them and walk them through it, they say, well, then what are we syncing up there? Because I don't want to sync my passwords, you know. So just walking through those scenarios seems to be a big thing now.
Yeah, that's like when we used to, the terminology we used to use in the identity team was there's single sign-on, which is the federated scenario you were just talking about, right, where you're coming back to your on-premises IDP. And then there's the same sign-on where I am syncing passwords. Let's be honest. Syncing password hashes, right? We would never send passwords. But the same sign-on is, you know, it's kind of like for people who don't want the hassle of having a publicly exposed IDP,
yep.
but they want the convenience of having that, you know, that synchronized password or that synchronized information. But really, yeah, you're right. The folks that are really don't want their password, even the hashes up there, just set up set up ADFS or some other IDP, and boom, you get all the benefits without the security concerns.
So, yeah, and that kind of ties into that new tool set that we have. Sorry, Sujeet. That new tool set that we have with Azure AD Connect, because I think one of the features there is Evan was talking about the synchronization and being able to sync passwords or just identities, but then it can go beyond that. So this AD Connect tool actually combines a couple things, and I think one of them is helping you actually provision that on-premise ADFS stuff.
Yeah, you know, I was just going to ask, is that okay? So we know that it doesn't sync the passwords, or there's an option to say don't sync the passwords, right? I know you can do it if you really want to. What exactly, so besides your, your username, right, which is something that is stored up in the cloud, what other attributes are stored in there that the customer should be aware of?
I mean, you've got your and this has kind of been changing over time, but these days you have your group membership, you know, you've got the
typical first name, last name.
Yeah, I was going to say, just general attributes. Your email is tied to that, right? Your proxy ID, I mean, those kind of things. It's the same kind of stuff you use in AD on-premises. I mean, Azure AD is really, the Azure AD team's probably going to scream, but it's relatively simple in concept. The implementation is incredibly difficult, but I just need to verify who you are and know the pieces of information that are necessary for the apps to consume that information, your name, you know, first name, last name, email, all that kind of stuff. But it really isn't like this super complicated concept.
Okay.
I think the other scenario that just got opened up, it wasn't there to begin with, but it's been there for a little while now, that we could do this synchronization with passwords. Like before, we could even do passwords. We couldn't do that initially.
Right.
If you remember the old DirSync tools, and then we got the synchronization of passwords, and then it kind of opened this door. And I've seen it mostly with like small or medium-sized business where they, you know, maybe they weren't in the business of running ADFS infrastructure. I mean, that's like Evan said, that's not particularly simple. There's a lot of servers involved there to make it redundant, and there's certificates involved and all kinds of things that need to be renewed and that kind of stuff. I want to say it's fragile, but it's something you got to maintain, right?
Mm-hmm.
And,
right?
And one of the things was, well, what happens if I do have an issue? You know, if something happens to your ADFS infrastructure and you have apps tied to this thing, your mail, but beyond that, maybe some actual line of business apps, then they can't log in. And so one of the things now is being able to do both, right? So we can synchronize, plus we can do federation, and then if something happens to our federation, we can kind of fail over and use those cloud identities until we figure out what's going on with our ADFS.
Okay.
So I think that opens up some cool scenarios there. You could do that with like PowerShell. There's commands to go ahead and fail that over like temporarily. There's some switches in there to basically make it temporarily, so it would use your cloud identity versus your federated. So I think that's kind of a neat feature.
Now, I think you explained, I understand what the Azure AD does, but I've also heard about the AD Premium. Is that what it's called, or Azure AD Premium? Is that a different SKU or a different tier of Azure AD?
Yeah. So basically the AD Connect, right, the new kind of implementation, it rolls the, you know, DirSync and Azure AD Sync, all those kind of different variants into one kind of better packaged thing. But part of what it includes in that is the ability, and this has been there for a while, we're just kind of integrating things better, but adding the ability to kind of add these premium features, which include things like, you know, SaaS, access to SaaS applications, right? So that we handle, Microsoft handles kind of the synchronization of the identity so that, let's say you're using Dropbox, and you want to use your organizational ID, your corporate account, Azure AD will manage either the synchronization of the passwords, you know, the password hashes, you know, so you can use the same credentials at the other place. Or some of them actually do, what's the terminology? It's an application password, I think we call it. But basically there's this, you know, you sign into those applications through a special portal, and Azure AD manage, you know, you give your password to Azure AD, and then Azure AD then says, okay, well, I'm going to then log you in with this user account that we provisioned for you over there, but you don't ever really know what it is.
It's so kind of like a Key Vault thing up there, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of, yeah.
But the net result is you don't ever know the credentials for your Dropbox account. So if you leave your organization, then you can't get into your Dropbox stuff that's associated with your organizational ID.
I see.
Right, it's almost like a double blind thing.
Yeah, I think they're in the portal, if I remember right, there's like a special area, it's like featured apps or something, and if you look at the description, you can see the ones that do that special, because there's not all of them do that by default.
Yeah. Huge list. I mean, I think, I'm like a couple thousand last time I looked, and that was a while ago.
Yeah, there's a lot.
So, Kale, it looks like, I mean, you know, from our development side, from writing apps for these kind of things, at some point we have to take this authentication information in Azure AD and create an identity object, right? What we call an identity object in .NET or in whatever system you're using. Do we have to use any special tools, or how does that work from an app perspective to be able to tap into Azure AD?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things. It depends on your app. So the experience I've had, you know, most recently with this is we've been using the ADL, which is the Azure Active Directory or Active Directory Authentication Library. And there's a couple different flavors of this. So there's one that could run, so if you're running like a web API or a backend, like a server-side type C-sharp stuff. So there's a way to leverage that. And basically, the easy way to implement that is to use Owen. So anybody familiar with ASP.NET and the Owen middleware framework, that allows you to very simply add a couple packages from NuGet to do ADO integration. And what happens is we, like I said before, we define our application that we want to run up there, that we want to authenticate through Azure AD in our tenant in Azure AD. There's a section in there to define your apps. And in there, you would define all the URLs for how your sign-ins happen, and there's a lot of different things you can set there from a permission standpoint. But the essential thing is it creates like this unique GUID up there, this client ID. That's kind of like the secret key. So basically, you could put that in your configuration for your web API, and now that helps establish that trust between the web API app that you're running there and Azure Active Directory. And then we can do the same thing on the JavaScript side. So if we have a front-end application or maybe like a spa-type application, we have an ADL JS library out there that we can use to do the same thing. So we would initialize in our core, or when we start up our app, we would initialize how that trust actually happens. And a lot of times what you do with these is, where it really comes into play is if you have multi-tier apps. So I mentioned before about decoupling layers and things. So if we had a front-end layer running X number of web servers running our spa app, they're accessing services on a web API layer, which is a whole other set of servers, which could be scaled independently depending on how many we need. But the problem is we need to authenticate everything, right? We can't just have people willy-nilly hitting our web API and making calls without having some sort of authentication, plus maybe authorization as well.
Right.
And so if you can leverage the ADL library along with Owen in these scenarios, very easy to get that stuff set up. So we could either have a front end go ahead and prompt and build the token up front, and then pass that every time he's calling the web API. The web API knows how to talk to Azure Active Directory as well, so he can validate the token's good and let them in or not let them in. At real high level, I mean, that's like a 10,000 foot view, but that's kind of what we've been working with.
Okay. And I know I hear the term claims being passed around a lot, right, these days when it comes to authorization. So all these ADL libraries are all claims aware, and they can share the claims that are defined both in Azure AD as well as in the clients on the customer's Azure AD environment.
Yeah, that's it's actually really cool to see how that works. That stuff I've done a little bit more custom coding on, but it depends on where the authorization stuff is. And typically, if you have an older application, it's probably in a database, right, that says here's how my roles are defined and all those kind of things. Mm-hmm. And so we have stored procedures or some queries to go ahead and get that data out. And the way we've been doing that is kind of we have a little shim there. So basically, whenever the authentication happens, we also will make a call out to, and if we're using Azure Active Directory, we can do Graph API queries and query out. So if we had our group membership stored in Azure Active Directory and synced with our tool, maybe, we could leverage the Azure AD groups, and basically we read what group memberships they're in and turn those into claims and shove those into token before we send it back to the client. And now that's part of that token. So when he gives it to the web API layer, he can say, well, only this group's allowed to access this method. And so he can look at that claim and see if it's in there to see if it's valid or not. You can also go, like I said, straight to a database. You don't have to go to Graph Explorer or Graph API. We could also just call back in database server and say, what are the roles for this user, and turn those into claims as well.
Right, but if you use the API, then you're kind of abstracted from that, right? You don't
even
know the details of that.
Yeah.
Cool.
Very good. All right, so I think that's a good good recap on Azure AD, just so that our listeners are aware of all the updates in that area and what Azure AD should be used for. I know, as you mentioned, Office 365 uses it in a big way, and applications that customers build on top of custom applications that they have in the cloud can also use Azure AD.
And we missed one huge place, by the way, that if you look at, I think it was at Build, it's one of the two conferences we just had, where we demonstrated publicly that you can now do domain join to your corporate AD from a computer through Azure Active Directory. Right? So now you can do a domain join for your machine without being on your domain.
Oh, I see. So you're actually virtually joined to the domain through Azure AD.
Yeah, and I don't know a lot about how we implemented that. I got to think at some level we're starting to manifest the computer objects, right, in
Yeah,
Azure
yeah.
AD versus we used to just be user objects. But
Correct.
man, I don't know about you guys, but I've had some challenges with my laptop recently, so I keep having to redo them. And it's always a pain because a lot of the things that I want to install and do because of the way we do our remote access, I got to be domain joined before I can do that.
Right.
And so that means my first pass and everything, I have to sit and do it in the office, right? And now you won't have to do that, right? You'll be able to join your domain just sitting from at home.
That's interesting.
Yeah, one other thing to mention, though, Sujeet, this past week I was working with one of our identity gurus, Mark Grimes. I think we've had him on the podcast before, but I mentioned to him, and he's got some other interesting kind of kibitz on this Azure AD stuff. So basically, I mean, he's all things guru on ADFS. I mean, that's what he lived and breathed for many years, and he's doing some interesting stuff with like IDP initiated scenarios. So some kind of advanced stuff that kind of streamlines how this stuff works. So I mentioned to him, he says he's interested in coming back. So I think in August maybe we'll have him on again.
Oh yeah, that would be great to have him on, definitely. I think ADFS is another component that we really need to talk about in another show. There's just so much there. Well, great. Thanks, guys. This is a good recap on Azure AD, and I think we can kind of call it a show over here. Anything else you guys want to add?
No, I think that's good. I mean, identity is such a core thing, you forget about it, but there's a ton of stuff going on in that space.
Yeah, I think this was great.
Well, thanks again, guys, and talk to you next week.
Yes, sounds good.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.